You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello there. My name is Miles Jupp, cricket fan, and together with my co-host Mark Wood, actual cricket man, we invite you to listen to Middle Please Umpire, a new cricket podcast containing the two of us banging on and sounding off together about cricket and quite possibly all manner of other things while lifting the lid on Mark's life as an international cricketer. And as if that wasn't enough, we shall be welcoming some great guests along the way and chatting to them about life on and off the playing field as they spill the beans, drop some truth bombs, and see if they can withstand the scrutiny of our brutal interrogations. Middle Please Umpire is available right now from all your favourite podcast providers.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the latest edition of your Manchester United Red Cars. Back once again, like the Renegade Master, for your delectation and delight after a wonderful win yesterday on the South Coast for Rocky Gunnar Solskjaer's Reds. That's right, I'm using that term. I'm going to call him Rocky because just when he's on the brink, he manages to pull back and, pull out the bag, mate. Pull out the bag. Joining me this week, Christopher Curley. Chris, mate, like, fucking hell, what a win. Looking back, United's win 3-2 in Southampton. We always have, like, exciting games against Southampton. We always have them, don't we?
Well, it felt like being a United fan yesterday, cussing and screaming and moaning and throwing cushions around the living room in the first half to running up and down through it, waking up the neighbours from their afternoon Sunday roast naps later on in the afternoon. It was a proper game. And, you know, we've got form, obviously, against Southampton with comebacks, and Zlatan did it in the League Cup final. And yesterday more reminded me of RVP's comeback in 2012, when we won 3-2 there in September in one of his early games. And it felt like we got a number nine again for the first time probably since then. Someone who attacked the space in Cavani. And it was just so exciting to see.
Yeah, 100%. Edinson Cavani at the double for United. I mean, I think in our sort of group chat, there was a lot of chat about the lineup and how Ollie lined it up. Let's be fair, we were undone by two set pieces.
Yeah, I mean, like, there was one person. Can we name that person in the group chat? Let's call him...
let's call him Roy.
Roy. yeah, okay, let's call him Roy. What Roy said was, and it was that he was against the formation changes and we should have a rhythm and a steady team. When I looked at that team sheet, it wasn't too much different from midweek because Donny was still in there. He just changed the midfield, and we've played that way before, particularly in away games with Rashford and Greenwood or Martial playing the inside forward. And as a false nine, Bruno was there, but, you know, Lingard actually did it to some success against Tottenham a while back under Ollie. It did it in the derby as well. So it has worked before. And I think when you look at Southampton's midfield, they're the strongest part of their team because they play a two and a two. and put fullbacks against fullbacks. That really needed to be combated with a lineup that was more like a diamond, really, for us. So I was okay. And actually, with the lineup itself, and said so in that group chat, and then looked silly when we went 2-0 down, but I was still right because we just missed chances and didn't take them. And that's always been a problem we've had with those youngsters who've been up front, just being clinical enough and taking their chances at the right time. So, for example, we were only 1-0 down when Greenwood had the shot that was saved and Bruno missed the follow-up because McCarthy made that extraordinary second save. But that was a key point in the game. If we'd have equalised then, things would have been much easier for us. And that's what we've not been great at over the last couple of years, even longer past Ollie's time, of taking the chances when you need them to be clinical, to make life easier for you, for yourself. Mm. And the rest, their two goals were kind of naive in lots of ways. Ward-Prowse can take a corner and you know not to give him cheap fouls outside the box. And we did that. My only question really is on De Gea for the second one, because does he have a technical fault? Because in midweek, he conceded the goal from a similar position of a free kick. And ended up trying to save it behind the line. And he seemed to do the same yesterday. And I'm curious as to, is that a technical error on his part? He's not moving his feet quick enough to get across to stop it. They've been great free kicks, yes, but the same things happened twice.
Do you want my stat attack?
Yeah, go for it.
Stat attack. We should have a jingle. We ain't got the budget for a jingle. United are the first side in Premier League history to win four consecutive away games, having trailed in each.
Is that right? Well, I've got a stat attack for you to top it.
Go on, lad. Let's have a stat off. Come on.
All right, here's one for you. Man United have never won 8 league victories away from home on the trot.
Yeah, it's the first time in their history.
Yeah, so that's like pretty good.
There you go.
Stat attack.
Stat attack.
Complete that segment.
Ollie said it's one of those that when you win, the mistakes we make don't really matter. At the end, I was proud at 2-2 because we did so well. The team is getting better and better and improving, which is what I want to see.
I thought second half, they won the ball back quickly, high up the pitch. I think I read that Henderson, from a journalist, that Henderson came on, was kept shouting at Maguire and Lindelof to not sit back and condense the play. And Wan-Bissaka was getting up the backsides of when the ball back quickly. So was Fred. And he just kept the pressure on. And I think there's been two distinct differences that I've noticed that we're getting better at with the two team changes and the two new signings have added quality because they keep the ball. So Van de Beek has been fantastic at short, sharp passes, keeping the ball, not giving it away cheaply, moving the ball quickly through the midfield to get those gaps. I think that's kind of changed the tempo of our play amazingly well.
The thing is, we win our game in hand. We go fourth.
Oh yeah,
behind Liverpool and Spurs.
I'm not getting too excited yet, just yet about that. I'm just kind of enjoying the subtle changes I'm seeing in the team, which I think can be embedded in the way that we play. That maybe in a few weeks' time can get us talking about, oh, actually, we're only 2 points off the top. What's going on here? Everyone else is having a weird time. We're looking pretty good. I think Telles has made a massive difference.
I agree.
Every time Telles gets the ball, he's looking forward, not looking sideways, not looking backwards like Luke Shaw does. He's looking forwards and he's got such quality with his left foot to stretch the play. It makes the back four drop off 5 yards because they know they might hit him over the top. Yet he can play it short then and create more space. And I think his quality is on that left side of the pitch. Very excited about when Moore and Cavani starts a game at number 9 and
he's
to work out how to cross the ball from the left.
He offers something else. He just offers. I'm a big fan.
I want him in swing. I want him taking in swinging corners though. He's not taken them yet. He did a couple in his first game. Well, he looked distinctly like he doesn't want to run over and take them. And Bruno's taking an outswinger. And I think sometimes if Telles sticking an in-swinger on a goalkeeper, it's going to be deadly with Maguire and Cavani attacking the ball.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, you look at the run of fixtures, we've got PSG, West Ham away, which is, we're notoriously, we're shit there, aren't we? Leipzig away, City at home. Our game in hand is Sheffield United away. And if we're not beating them, then we ain't ever going to beat anyone. And then we got dirty Leeds. Dirty Leeds. Tell me about your memories about dirty Leeds.
I've never smelt fear at a Leeds game as much as I have done, ever. I remember I was at the Youth Cup game in 92, the Class of 92 Youth Final. Old Trafford, 30,000 people turned up for that. And they were singing Munich songs. And outside, it was deadly. The year before, in the September, I think we drew 1-1 with them. Lee Chapman scored. Schmeichel missed the cross and he got a header at the far post. But I remember my biggest memory of that is the announcer at Old Trafford said...
Keith Fane.
Pardon?
Keith Fane.
It might have been Keith. Don't think it was Keith. I think it was a woman because it was a health and safety issue.
Was it the doo-doo woman?
Yeah, it was her.
Yeah.
She said, will the owner of car CNE439Y please return to it because it's on fire? And then 30 seconds later, bing bong again, she comes on and says, will the owner of car G321XDB please return to your car because it's next to it? And it was the only thing that made Leeds and Man United fans laugh at the same time. And I always remembered that and that period of United Leeds. But, you know, we hate Liverpool, we hate City, but we really hate Leeds. But, you know, there's a generation of fans who don't know this hatred. There's a generation of players who don't know this hatred. And so I'm quite grateful that we're not going to Elland Road first with a full stadium, because I promise you that place will scare those United. Will scare quite a few of those United lads. They won't know what's hit them, I think. And Leeds, but you watch Leeds now, and I love watching them. They're murder ball.
Bielsa's a good manager. my first encounter with Leeds was actually the treble season. We'd just been dicked 3-1 away at Sheffield Wednesday. The week before, and I remember we were going up to Old Trafford and we were a bit nervous. We went on quite a poor run of form though. I didn't think we won. We beat Leeds and then we lost. And then we beat Forest on... We played Forest on Boxing Day, but we lost like one, maybe two of our games.
Middlesbrough beat us at home.
And then we didn't lose again.
Before Christmas, 3-2.
And then we didn't lose again the whole season.
Yeah.
But, you know, I remember Leeds, 3-2. At Old Trafford, Nicky Butt scored the winner. Proper boggy surface at Old Trafford.
I think Paul Robinson came on at half time and made his debut. That pitch wasn't good that time.
The pitch was terrible, mate. It was a very terrible pitch. And then I went Leeds away. We drew 1-1. Andy Cole scored in that season. I remember we've had some good battles with Leeds over.
Well, I remember when we won the title in 2003, Leeds beat Arsenal at Highbury. I was living near there, so we actually won the title, and me and Roy from the WhatsApp chat, we went down to the ground after the game had finished and went down to Highbury with a few tins. And the back door was open, so we went into the ground, and the cleaners were all in, doing the stand. So we went into the stand and then took a fake couple of black bags and got on the centre circle and started singing United songs until we got chased off.
Very good, mate.
That was the way we celebrated that title with a bit of trespassing.
Was Roy a bit of a rascal?
He thinks he is. I mean, he thinks he's a bit of a rascal. He's not. You'll know the type, Aaron, here, but he's not very far off of ringing in a radio phone in, but it has never been to a game ever. He's that kind of bloke. He'll be first on at 5:10, moaning about getting beat, pretending he was at the game but wasn't. He's a bit like that.
There you go. Good work, Roy. Good work, Roy lad. I don't know how we got into talking about dirty Leeds. Should we take a wee break? Let's do it. It's the Manchester United Redcast.
If you want an e-bike that doesn't look like it's made for the shopping precinct, Something that's less Mr. Bean and more Steve McQueen. Check out the range of bikes from London-based Cooler King. From dope 250-watt city bikes to Harley Bobber-inspired 750-watt beasts that can tear your face off while leaving your smile intact. Cooler Kings are made in limited numbers, yet highly affordable. Check them out now on the web at cooler.bike or find them on Instagram with hashtag CoolerKingBike. Cooler.bike. E-bikes that are cool AF.
Welcome back to your Manchester United Redcast. The day after United beat Southampton 3-2 at St. Mary's. Edinson Cavani. I tell you what, actually, you know, we should actually talk about, obviously, Maradona. I mean, not many people have talked about Maradona and the fact that he died this week. But, you know, I was talking to another, you know, sort of, I'm just going to say a football fan this week, about Maradona, Pele, and sort of why they have this amazing sort of, you know, this nature, this air of mystery about them. Now, I want to ask you a personal question, Christopher. How old are you?
I'm 44.
You're 44.
I know I sound younger, Aaron.
You do, mate. You do. You know, you're a, you know, you
look younger too, just so you know.
Mate, you use the old oil of Ole, don't you?
I mean, religiously.
There you go.
It's the travel season.
Very good. I'm 29. And for me...
You're a baby.
Well, some would say. But, you know, for that football fan, he said that the air of mystique over Pelé and Maradona was there because there was not that much football coverage. Right now, we're flooded with football coverage. And so thinking about certain players and sort of what, you know, they did for us when we saw them, it's just gone. You know,
disagree a little bit with your friend there.
Because
Pele and Maradona have both got incredible human stories, which reflects why we love the game so much.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Pele was 17, a young boy, tore the World Cup in half and won it in 1958. Imagine being 17 and doing that, right? And then 62, they won the World Cup again. Incredible. 66, he got kicked out of it in England and we won it. And then 70 turned up and there was the greatest batch of world players, probably in one team that's ever been. You can argue maybe Spain 2010. But that Brazil side was full of people and he was the king of kings. And it was a different era. It was the first time we'd seen football in colour in that World Cup. And this mystique of Pelé and number 10 and being the best player in the world all kind of came together. Whereas Maradona turned up, and he's kind of the good guy, you know, not long after, a lot of comparisons with Pelé in terms of being 17 when he first broke into the national side in a World Cup. I think he was in the squad in 78, but 82 he got sent off and was a bad boy. So he was like the opposite of Pelé in that sense. And then in 86, I mean, that was probably, I mean, I remember 82, but 86 was the first, it would be Penguin book, but 86 was the first World Cup I ever watched.
Yeah.
And the thing about Maradona in 86 and why he kind of encapsulated and captured the imagination of a lot of people, there was a couple of things. I mean, firstly, as a 10-year-old watching that, watching a chubby little left footer, as I was, but watching a chubby little left footer be the best player ever, that really set a bar for me to try to achieve at school at Longsight, right? Watching Maradona, have I got to do that? Have I got to be able to do that? Oh, God, I don't know if I'm going to do that. But if you think about Maradona, the way he played the game and how far away he was, so much better than everybody else. I mean, I've had messages, people text me saying, oh, well, you know, VAR was around, Hand of God wouldn't have happened, and the second goal wouldn't have happened because Hoddle got fouled. Well, I tell you what, if VAR was around, England would have been down to about 8 men in the first half because they all assaulted Maradona. And that's the way he had to play the game, by literally getting GBH on him every week in every game. And so that's why my opinion on the hand of God, even though he made me cry as a 10-year-old, has kind of changed. I don't blame him for doing it when he's been being kicked off the field for a good 45 minutes. Yeah. You know what, Griff? I'm going to have to do this. This is the only way I'm going to do it. Plus, if you watch it, Peter Shilton is still so angry at himself that he never jumped. He didn't get off the ground. Did not get off the ground against his 5'6". Like, if you see the picture, there's a freeze frame, which is amazing, where he is like, Maradona's feet are at Shilton's shoulders. And so, frankly, he deserves to cheat for being able to jump that high. And the second goal, well, we all know Peter Reid is still chasing him. And I personally know that if Brian Robson was playing and he was injured, he would never have scored either goal and we'd have probably beaten them. But that's a different...
Okay. Whoa. Okay. But what I'm saying is... What I'm saying is, if you look at players of today, if you turn around to me and go, oh, Aaron, there's this Chinese kid who's 13 and he's absolutely unreal, mate. Banging in goals for fun, skills left, right, centre, up, down, everything like that. You know what I'd do straight away? Bang on YouTube. YouTube, try and find him. Google, try and find him. I reckon the internet has bastardised these sort of...
I don't know.
And I'm looking, whoa, Kemosabe. Let me give my example. Let me give my reason.
Go on. Okay?
When I think back to like the 90s to the early 2000s, I think football was at its peak, yeah? Up until like 06, 07, around there. At its peak. To the point where when you played in a Champions League game, when you had a team come to town like a Dortmund or a Barcelona or a Bayern Munich, you knew they were good. But you know these other players they had in their lineup. You didn't know about them because all you'd seen of them was maybe 20 seconds on Transworld Sport or something like that on like 6 o'clock on a Saturday morning. So when Bayern turned up to United in 99 with Giovanni Albert, yeah, Bayern had Giovanni Albert, who was an unreal footballer.
He was rubbish.
You shit yourself, mate.
No. Yeah?
And then when Barcelona have Sonny Anderson up front, you shit yourself. Ooh. Mate, I remember thinking to myself, the player I think this sort of refers with most is Gabriel Batistuta. Gabriel Batistuta was this unreal footballer, but he had an air of mystique.
I think the exact opposite. The more you know about them, the less scary they are. So, like, when you don't
That's what I'm saying. But, you know, as a fan, it gave you excitement. You think about the game all day, mate. You sit there and you go, oh,
fuck. I think about the game all the time. No, just because you can see it in the YouTube or there's the internet to watch.
I think we know too much about players. We used to sit there in our heads and there were so many more talking points. We'd sit there and go, fuck me, John O'Shea up against Francesco Totti. Wonder what Totti's going to bring into that. Oh, mate, I saw him at Euro 96 or I saw him at, you know, France 2000. He is fucking unreal. And Shea's always going to have a tough job tonight. Mikel Silvestre up against fucking Gabriel Batistuta. What's going to happen there?
There's some players you mentioned that, like Sonny Anderson and Elbert, who were, I think, relatively average in European football. They didn't have great international careers. You know, I'm talking about players in the 80s and early 90s who have this mystique. We're talking about the best of the best who have this mystique about them that you have heard about them, and it is a bit of hearsay. And then you get to watch them and see them, and it's true. But in the same
you
way,
you say Batistuta didn't have a good international career.
No, I didn't say Batistuta. I said two of you three. And
I apologize again.
I think Platini, you know, that era of Platini, Rummenigge, later on, you know, 94, we heard about this kid Ronaldo that was in the Brazilian squad. Mm. He was 17 but didn't get a game. 4 years later, he dominates the tournament with Zidane. So footballers always create who are the best two players in the world. The lull has come, I would say the lull came, until Messi and Ronaldo turned up. It was like a 6-7 year lull of who is the best player. And who can sustain it? You see, sustaining a career is interesting. Ronaldinho sustained a career for 2 or 3 years at the top level, right? When he was the best player in the world. Mm-hmm. George Weah, similarly, a couple of years. But Pele did it for a decade. Maradona did it for a decade. Zidane did it for a decade. Ronaldo would have done it, first Ronaldo, for a decade, but for his injury, and was still great. And now we've been so blessed to have Messi and Ronaldo for 15 years. Arguably they're better than Pele and Maradona. There's a good argument to be made because of their longevity and the consistency of their performance at such a high level. So, you know, they're all in that bracket. These people have come along for the last 50 years of being the best of the the best of the best. So I don't think it's that much different.
It's massively different, mate. Massively different. There's so much more room to overhype a player right now that they don't have the opportunity to just get on with it. Plus, don't forget, when Pelé and Maradona were playing, in this country, if you were to watch these players, the only time you'd watch them were at a World Cup or if they were playing in the European Cup.
My point is the cream always rises to the top anyway.
Yeah.
And always has done. So it's not different. I think the players that we're talking about, you can watch on YouTube and go, they're playing them. So what? They're not in the same kind of league as the best of the best as they've always been. And I think actually we get less excited by watching these players because we see them so often.
That's what I'm saying. There's the air of mystique is gone. The air of mystique around a player is completely, completely gone. I remember a point where if you think about it, if you put it in context, like you look at someone like Lewandowski would be absolutely, if he played in the early 2000s, people would shit themselves about him. People would sit there and go, well, what information are you going to get about him? Well, you can't go onto Google. There's no such thing as YouTube. You're sat here.
There was Google then. I can point out there was Google.
You had money. You know, our idea of a computer was
work. I was at work. It's not a poor thing. I was just at work. We had Google. We didn't have internet at home, man. Then
my idea of Google or encyclopedia was we knew a really clever bloke in our family. We used to just ask him things. Yeah, that was it. Very simple. But basically, you know, Lewandowski would have been godlike back then, purely because it's like, oh well, there's this goal machine, you know, this Polish goal machine in a German club, and he's smashing it to pieces. And when he comes down in the quarterfinals, well, how are they getting on in the group stage, the second knockout phase of the Champions League? How are they getting on there? Well, you know what, they could come and face us, and oh my god, it's gonna be really tough for Sol Campbell. It's gonna be really tough for, you know, for Steve Bruce or X, Y, and Z. You know, look at Mbappe. I don't feel one bit of excitement when I see this kid play, because I just think he's been hyped and hyped and hyped and hyped and hyped and hyped and hyped. And eventually, it's just going to crack, mate. It's just going to crack. I think the last time we saw that whole thing about international football having this mystique and this intrigue about it was World Cup 02. World Cup 02, when it was Ronaldinho, Rivaldo. And it was like, this front three are fucking insane. Absolutely insane. They're going to destroy teams. And then after that, it was like, kind of, maybe Euro 2004, Trezeguet, Henri, et cetera, but I don't know. I think
it's a different conversation, though. It's more about how the weight of popularity between international and European competition has kind of changed that, rather than the ability of players or information. It's like the saturation of European competition, of course, makes you, in some ways, really familiar with these things. But I still think, you know, local, national competition is still what people want first. Mm. I'm not really bothered about first. Watching Bekashir on Wednesday in the Champions League, I'm kind of not that fussed. Whereas I probably was in the 90s because it was special, because there was less games to play in Europe and the more you play, less. Similarly, international football has become a summer thing and it's a few summer nights out. And it's lost a lot of its mystique because, of course, you know, we see all these players in the European competitions now. So I get what you're saying from that point of view. I still think I don't know about the World Cups. It's hard to say. I don't think we've had a great. I don't think we've had a great World Cup since Usain, because actually Messi and Ronaldo, the two best players in the world, haven't performed at the World Cup. You know, the great players haven't performed at the World Cups, largely because they may be fatigued from a European season. Whereas what you talked about in 2002, you know, Ronaldo was coming back off his injury, and that was a great time with Ronaldinho and Rivaldo. So perhaps since then, something to do with the stars haven't performed at the World Cup makes them less special, maybe. I don't know.
Maybe, mate. Maybe. You can have us at United Redcast on Twitter if you have your fancy. You know, if you're bored, you can just tweet us if you like. Let's look ahead to the game. In the Champions League. Can you do the Champions League anthem? Can you do like an impression of that?
No, but I just put it on every time I, you know, get dressed or ready to go out. Gives me a bit of a buzz.
The champions. Yeah. United taking on PSG at Old Trafford. The fact that it's at Old Trafford, like, scares me somewhat. I don't know about
that. I think it's a dangerous game for us, actually, because what we don't want to be doing is going to Leipzig needing to get a result. And when Leipzig can beat us to qualify in the top two. So I think, you know, we've got to take something out of the PSG game. And it's going to be harder because I think they'll feel like we need to sort these lads out because they've embarrassed us twice. I think Verratti is back fit and that'll make a massive difference to their midfield. Plus, you know, we've got some issues with Tuanzebe being suspended. He played great, of course, in the first game. De Gea's doubtful, Van der Beek's injured. Martial's probably out because he's ill. So there's a few issues there for Ollie to overcome, I think, with the team lineup to get a result. I'd hope. I actually think we probably should play two screeners again and have Fred and McTominay up, in there with Bruno and maybe have Van der Beek on the bench, actually. Because I think it's going to be a game, you could quite easily fall between two stools with that game. Cavani, of course, will be highly motivated against his former club. That's a good thing. But he's likely to come up with a three-match ban because of his tweet last night. So we might as well squeeze as much as we can out of him until he may have to take that punishment.
Yeah. Where else are we on this?
It's just a tricky game. And then, you know, what we don't want to do coming up to West Ham on Saturday is lose the momentum that we gained from the win yesterday. So it's going to be a tricky week, I think.
5:30 Saturday. On, I'm concerned. I don't know about you.
Well, be interesting. West Ham are playing tonight, aren't they? So, how close is Antonio getting back fit? I'm much more positive that it's an evening kickoff at West Ham rather than a morning one because we're rubbish in the mornings at West Ham in the last few years, and we've given some of our worst performances at the London Stadium. But I kind of expect us to build on the success of Southampton now and go on a bit of a and get us in good shape for the derby in a week on Saturday. And that's really going to be a fork in the road, the derby. And if we can put pressure on City, because City will need the points. But it'll be a massive confidence booster yesterday. And you'd want to think that they can take that through now for what will be a very, very busy month of games. December is typically tough from that point of view, but even more difficult, I think, this year. With everything that's going on. But there's a squad. You feel like there's a squad there. You feel like there's 18 players there who, you know, you don't particularly weaken the side too much when you put it out.
Is he under pressure again? Like, I don't know. Every time, you know, we go close to losing a game, I'm sat there going, fucking hell, this is like the one of the two. Because I'm convinced he loses back-to-back games and he's gone.
I know, but that's the news cycle that we're all chasing, isn't it? Rather than being able to critically look at things in context with understanding, which ain't a great strength of the great British public, as we've seen in other areas of life in the last 4 years. I think, you know, if you in context, you look at everything that Ollie has did and has done, he deserves to keep going. I believe he's made the right calls largely. I believe he's made the right team selections. I think that there's a lot of inexperience in that team still. And there are things that need sorting out, but he's sorted them out so far. I think, you know, no one's talking about Paul Pogba, but he made the big decision to drop him. That was a bold one. You know, no one's talking about Pogba coming back into the team.
Is he injured? Has he dropped him or is he injured?
I think a bit of both. You know, he's in no rush. In the last year, Pogba's hardly played, right? And we've been better without him, largely. He had a little monthly spell in the summer, at the end of last season, where Pogba did all right, but we've been a better team without him. And sometimes your best players don't make your best team.
Yeah, I agree, Paul. I agree. It's just United are such a funny, like, fucking animal right now. I mean, I was thinking last night, Arsenal getting beat by Wolves. When's Arteta going to be under pressure? When's Arteta going to get the shit that Ollie gets?
Arteta, you know, has won the FA Cup with Arsenal, bought him some time.
He's lost a lot of games, you know.
Yeah, I think, again, he's going through some uncertainty of... he's playing a game of stick or twist. Be solid, and so we don't concede, and that compromise the attack. Yet, it's not really working, is it? So, I think he's got a problem with his own midfield. Partey's out, I think, till January. He has made these signings. He hasn't got that creative spark. He's made a political decision, like Ollie has with Pogba, to leave out Ozil. Well, Ertel hasn't played well for 3 years. It's funny, since these people get these big contracts, you know, De Gea's form dropped massively when they gave him a big contract they didn't need to. Ertel's the same. You'd argue that since Aubameyang was awesome before he signed his new contract, untouchable, since then he's done nothing. So I think, you know, football's difficult, but we run out of patience and we move things on. I think Arsenal haven't got the quality of players that we have. I just don't think they have. You know,
I agree.
Playing 10 months of a season, that's hard. Playing well, in every walk of life, in every job, it is hard to be good all the time. Even if you're a plumber. I'm sure if you're a plumber, you've done a couple of bad jobs sometimes, and you've done some great jobs.
Yeah, everyone's done a Friday afternoon, mate. In all walks of life, everyone has done a fucking Friday afternoon job.
Yeah, but football's, I don't think football and footballers are no different. I think paying them too much makes you care less. I think you're paying, you know, I think it just does. Where's your hunger? It's gonna soften you up a bit.
Very quickly before we close, I actually just wanna say how sad I was to see about the death of someone who scored a fucking rocket against us. Papa Booba Diop, the wardrobe. Do you remember him?
I do vaguely have some memories of bidding for him in our fantasy league. I mean, occasionally him in my fantasy league. I think largely after that 35-yard screamer, thinking he might get a few more of them. Let's give him a go.
The wardrobe, Papa Booba Diop, sadly died just in his early 40s, but he scored a bloody brilliant goal against us. I remember Roy Carroll was in net. We played Fulham it might have been at Craven Cottage, it might have been Loftus Road, and he just fucking lashed the ball. Absolutely lashed the ball to a top corner. And I think the commentator was Rob Hawthorne. He was like, nearly burst the net, and it actually nearly did. It was just so hard. But
he's got one of the great names in football history. You have to say that. It's just a lovely thing to say. You'll know, as a reporter, saying Papa Booba Diop.
Papa Booba Diop, would be
a fun thing to say.
There's a few I dislike. So Papa Booba Diop's a good one.
Eric Jemba Jemba was good.
Yeah, Mishi Batshuayi. I'm trying to. There's Jan Venegor of Hesselink.
Oh yeah, that was a good one.
Jan Venegor of Hesselink. Yeah, there's a few, but rest easy, mate.
Herman Hreiðarsson.
Not to be confused with Herman's Hermits, of course.
Yeah, the ironic thing about this is we've picked quite a few ex-Portsmouth players who had a Redknapp bought and probably...
He's in the shop window. Who else? Nico Cranch, Linvoy Primus. What a nicest man in football, apparently, by all accounts. Thank you very much, Chris, for joining me. Should we have a little pre-do? Do you fancy a little pre-do?
I'm going against PSG. I'm going to go score draw against PSG. I think I'm going to go 1-1 nail-biting draw. And then I think on Saturday we'll beat West Ham 2-1.
I think we're going to beat PSG, you know.
Good.
I think we're going to beat him 2-0, 2-1, somewhere around that. And then I'm a little bit concerned about West Ham away. I've always been concerned about West Ham away. I just wonder how it's gonna go. But yeah, I'll probably go. I think they'll score first, but I think we'll win 3-1 on Saturday. Chris, thank you very much for joining me, mate. I really appreciate it, pal.
It was a pleasure. I feel like we've had a big old heated masturbate.
We have. We've had a laughter, haven't we?
Yeah, I feel I've just missed. It's kind of the chat I've normally had in a pub, but I haven't been in a pub since March.
Good.
So I've enjoyed that.
Lovely, lovely, lovely. Christopher, thank you for joining me, pal. Don't forget the United Red Cast, available on all your favourite podcasts, the places you get your podcasts, if you like. I'm Aaron Paul, he's Chris Curley. Catch you soon.
Wasn't that a great podcast? Now, if you've got 90 seconds spare in your day, come and listen to ours. It's called What Has He Said Now? And is available wherever you got this podcast.
You're going to lose a number of people to the flu.
This is a Playback Media production. Get all the associated links for this podcast at unitedredcast.com. www.sportsocialpodcastnetwork.com.